the world tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. What are the chances for the survival of the civilized Western world for another 100 years? Well, they are two, slim and none. In the bicentennial year, maybe it is important to think back on the fact that 200 years ago was the date for the publication of the first volume of Edward Gibbon's historic work, The Decline and the Fall of the Roman Empire. And now, in this bicentennial year, another book called The Fall of the Roman Empire, A Reappraisal by Michael Grant, has been published, and some of the excerpts from it are absolutely unbelievable. As you look at the superposition of all of the ills, the diseases, and the problems that racked that empire from a 100-year span where previously it had been a gigantic, unbelievable monument to civilization, a huge standing army, power, purpose, goals, will, millions of people basking in the sunshine of what was called Pax Romana, or the Romish peace. And yet 100 years later, it had completely vanished and there was no Western Empire at all. The territory was occupied by a group of German kingdoms. And you know, over the many, many decades since, it has been frequently felt by writers all the way down through the Middle Ages and into the modern Renaissance period, and particularly in our modern 20th century, as we've seen the great nations of the world, particularly the United States and the affluent Western European nations, with our six societies, who have continually been appraised in the light of what happened in the decline and the final collapse of that great empire so long ago. Because many historians would see in the pattern today, so visible, so painfully visible in the Western democracies of this world, the very same thread, the very same spirit which brought about the final decline and fall of the Roman Empire. The only real question is, how near is it to collapse? Anyone who studies the rise and fall of human kingdoms, the vagaries of politics, who knows the overview of the world today, a world armed to its nuclear teeth with a capacity for the extermination of all of human life by at least three, if not four or more, separate methods, with nation after nation reeling under tribalism, racism, under political strife and terrorism, mass murder, kidnappings, the topple of government, and at the same time, more and more smaller nations with their own axes to grind against hostile neighbors coming to possess the atomic or the hydrogen bomb. No one in his right mind would predict that we are going to enter a new era of a splendiferous millennium of man's own making, where all of the world knows nothing but peace and harmony in perpetuity. Now, those who really appraise, who are not afraid to look at the overview of the entirety of this world, only ask the question, how near is Western civilization to collapse? If you were to read the excerpts from that book, or better yet, the book itself, you might find that there are tremendous inferences which are impossible to ignore in the lesson of the collapse of Rome, which apply to the United States of America today. There have been hundreds of reasons suggested for the collapse of the Roman West. Gibbon himself lists at least 24, and that may be a little bit confusing for someone who is searching for the quickest answers. But we have a booklet which catalogs the entire overview of what happened, how the lessons of history were ignored by some of those of the affluent Roman Empire during a time when they never had it so good, when they simply could not look at the decay from within and the attacks from without as being symbolic of what might eventually become the complete collapse of the empire. Never, at the height of her power, had ancient Rome ever had it so good. Never, at any time in history, so far as the world had been, could the people have looked more confidently to their own future? That was the Roman people of the second century of our own era. Within that empire at that time, law and order prevailed, and never before did everybody have it almost so good. No foreign power could challenge Rome. Why, then, did such a civilization decline at all?
and why did it decline so rapidly that within 100 years, the Roman Empire was plunged irreversibly into anarchy and penury, ravaged by foreign aggressors and doomed to extinction? And is there any reason to wonder these questions anyway, because has anyone ever learned from the lessons of history to avoid the mistakes in the future which could bring about a repetition of such history? The answer seems to be no. The United States has never applied lessons we should have learned through our wars and the agonies of the past. Though some of the famous generals of the Pacific era, or area rather, in World War II warned the United States governments that we should never become involved in a land war in Asia, we became involved in two after World War II, both of which were absolutely disastrous to American military might, disastrous to our prestige abroad, disastrous from both the staggering loss of life and the enormous loss of dollars and power and strength that it meant. Korea was not a victory for the United States. It was a decisive defeat, because after it was all over, everything in Korea was just as it was. And we are yet going to learn that Korea will become a terrible thorn in our side. We didn't learn the lesson from the history of Korea, where we fought a war along a peninsula inhabited by the same kinds of people that we could not have told apart either by language or appearance, who were divided by a completely artificial line along a parallel, which is merely a political line drawn on a map that recognizes no physical boundaries, no confluences of rivers, no valleys, no mountain ranges, no railways or roads, a totally artificial line drawn on a political map. And for that, we spent all of the human life that we did in a failing war, which ended in defeat, really, in Korea. We could have learned from that, because that flew in the face of military advice, but we didn't. And so through several presidential administrations, beginning clear back with the days of Eisenhower, when we began to become involved after World War II in Southeast Asia and Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam, Burma, and then heightened involvement during the Johnson administration, still greater involvement during the Nixon administration, and finally, out of the war. Of course, the Kennedy administration also was involved very heavily in Vietnam, as was it in Laos. And so through several administrations of the United States government, we again flew in the face of the lesson of history, and one of the most bitter defeats in the entirety of the United States history is still tearing apart a lot of Americans because of the shattered lives of so many families and because of the terrible loss of prestige in the world at large. And to this day, we still suffer from the deep bleeding wound that was Vietnam. So when was it any nation really learned the lessons of history? Have we learned the lessons of that terrible era just prior to World War II, when runaway inflation, then business recession, one very swift near collapse came along a few years before the final great stock market collapse of 1929, which ushered upon the world a new era of abject poverty for the entirety of Western Europe and the United States, which caused massive migrations of farming folk from the midsections of the United States into a great wrath area in the Central Valley of California, which sent Germans with wheelbarrows full of useless money to buy nothing short of a loaf of bread at their stores. And out of this emerged the anarchistic movements in nation after nation, from Mussolini's black shirts to Hitler's brown shirts, that brought waves of new despotism to nation after nation in Europe. And when all was said and done, the world was once again rearming under the iron fist of various dictators, and the other free world looking on in amazement and disbelief, unwilling to accept what their very eyes told them, unwilling to believe the speeches of Hitler and Mussolini until it was too late. Until now, the world plunged over the abyss into World War II. And all during that war, we were fighting the war to end all wars. And we said we were going to make the world safe for democracy. And right during the war, the tremendous aid flowing to Russia, the Lend-Lease program, which was never, of course, repaid, And finally, the decisive events at Yalta and Potsdam, and then the partitioning of Europe. And finally, we came to understand that half of Europe had been sold down the drain, that the Russians had jumped in the war against Japan only about 5 days from the surrender so they could grab what they wanted of those territories adjacent to Japan, Kamchatka Peninsula, etc., and would have grabbed even more if it had been possible. Then came the Berlin Wall. We look around with amazement and we discover that old Uncle Joe, that the thousands used to applaud when they saw his mustachioed face on American movie screens, was not really all that much an ally of the West, as Sir Winston Churchill had warned even prior to World War II, but that communism was an enemy of the West, that they sought our subjugation. So an Iron Curtain clanked down around Europe and a bank.
Stocks, and then whipped as a group of sadomasochists follow or pursue whatever bizarre, strange sexual thrills they achieve out of this type of either real or alleged brutality. Then, of course, the hue and cry is lifted up against such a police department who would dare to interfere with the life of these so-called gay people, that this is somehow an infringement upon their constitutional rights. Everybody, it is assumed, has the constitutional right to be weird, to be absolutely perverse, to be base, to be bestial. And anyone who would either teach, preach, write, or attempt by the use of law to take away that alleged constitutional right to be like a beast or an animal crawling in a trough full of absolute slop and slime is looked upon as some kind of a redneck right-winger who belongs in an institution himself. And so in society today, we see beginning to happen in the Western civilization of the modern 20th century era that very same thing which tore ancient Rome apart. It's called the glorification of the sickness of society. Now, a few years ago, when I would say before thousands upon thousands of people in large-scale public meetings, Uncle Sam is sick. A few years ago, when we published in a Plain Truth magazine that whole special issue that had the cover about Uncle Sam being sick, and we showed the old guy with sickness in his bones, his heart and vital organs, his circulatory system, his muscular and skeletal system, his nervous system, and we applied every last bit of that to the communications media. The labor force was the muscle. The bone structure and skeletal structure was that hope of the founding fathers. The circulatory system was our traffic system and mail system and so on. And we showed every last bit of old Uncle Sam was desperately sick. Then we had the response from a lot of politician types who said, let's not talk about what's wrong about America. Let's talk about what's right about America. So they meant to talk about Mount Rushmore. That's right about America. They wanted to talk about Kansas wheat fields. That's right about America, except when you realize a lot of times it's stricken with drought and what is being produced is sold to the Russians, but it's still nice to look at. Beautiful pictures. We see the harvest. We see the cattle placidly eating the wheat. As long as we don't see the visions of all of the people starving in a sub-Sahara, that doesn't bother us. When we talk about what's right about America, it's from purple sea to purple sea. The reason they're purple is because of oil spillage, of pollution in the bays and estuaries, the disappearance of some of the underwater fisheries, the ravages of our own polluting, voracious, greedy devouring of non-renewable Earth's resources, which we want to dump into the ocean and expect the ocean to take the assault and the insult of modern technology from now into the millennia to come. Purple Mountain Majesty, well, the reason they are purple is because of two things. Most of the trees have been burnt off of them by forest fires, sometimes set by crazed idiots who are arsonists who have come out of a movie where they saw somebody else do the same thing, or you're looking at them through a haze of smog that is blinding your eyes and choking your lungs and at the same time doing everything from deteriorating the windshield wipers on your car to perhaps disintegrating bricks. So when we think about that which is right about America, we like to think of verdant mountain streams, of pastures, of waving fields of grain, of purple mountain majesty, of a shining sea. But we oftentimes do not realize that America is in fact sick, and that our sickness is being glorified. The way to glorify a social sickness is to make it so exciting, so fantastic to watch,
And what motion pictures are there now that are really so uplifting you want to take all the kiddies by the hand and go sit down as a family and see something that really does appeal to you? You can see people being submachine gunned into two. You can see some great big fat naked broad putting people out of their misery with a machine gun. You can see the so-called glorified criminals of the past, everybody from Pretty Boy Floyd to Bonnie and Clyde being glorified in films. But more important now, you see these movies about Magnum Force, or you see people doing unbelievable things with sawed-off shotguns and submachine guns and 44 and 357 Magnums. But then it goes from that into pornography, where you see movies where even the intellectual community has expanded the range of freedoms to the point that the Supreme Court doesn't know what is dirty, and so the neighborhood theater may be showing Deep Throat, where the one right around the corner may be showing a fairly harmless John Wayne Western. And people can take their pick, but the extent of the impact of books, of films, and communications media on the nation's morals is no longer a matter of controversy. It's absolutely proved. There are hundreds upon hundreds of policemen who know, because they deal with it all the time. They pick up some character after a wretched, filthy murder which involved the mugging of an elderly lady and perhaps her rape and then her murder. And they find all types of pornographic materials in the flat of the apartment of the man who perpetrated the crime, or perhaps in his hip pocket. They are not necessarily always psychologists, but they don't feel it takes a psychologist to see the direct cause and effect relationship in such a crime. Or when they arrest someone who has just finished perpetrating a brutal murder, and he tells them, "I saw it on television." They honestly believe the man, in the stress of that moment of arrest and the booking procedure, that maybe he means what he says. And so the people who have to clean up the wretched, filthy messes of society, policemen, judges, lawyers, jurors, ambulance drivers, doctors on emergency call in county hospitals, they sometimes see very quickly and very easily what people with full stomachs and comfortable homes, free to philosophize as they read the editorial pages of their ultra-liberal news media, cannot quite see. No, we're in a bicentennial year, and you can't help but reflect on the fact that the fall of Rome originally came out in the first year of our history as far as being a nation, after the founding documents were adopted in 1776, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and then in 1976, another book called The Fall of the Roman Empire, A Reappraisal, is now out. It might be quite instructive for you to read that, and I wish you'd write for this booklet called The Modern Romans, The Decline of Western Civilization. It contains a great deal of what I've said and a lot more that shows you precisely why the United States is headed down the drain and going the wrong way today. The Modern Romans superposes what happened then with what is happening now. You can have it if you will call the toll-free number 800-423-4444, and you'll have yours on the way in the mail as soon as we get your name and address. It's free of charge if you will tell us the call letters of your radio station. You can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, or better yet, call the toll-free number 800-423-4444 right now, and it'll be on its way to you. Till next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.